Hello, welcome back. Thanks for coming back. For those who joined us earlier, hopefully you're refreshed, caffeinated, and ready to learn a lot more about the Microsoft System Center and capabilities and how they relate to hybrid cloud and Windows Azure. Now, we had a great first session where we talked about some of the chargebacks, some of the monitoring, some of the cool stuff around that within the System Center set of technology, particularly focused on Ops Manager, but we dipped into Service Manager. We had a look at Orchestrator as well. But there were some cool questions came in throughout that session that we didn't quite get time to answer, and I want to make sure that we put Pete as in an uncomfortable position as possible by giving them to him at this point in time. So without further ado, there was a couple that came in, so let me fire these at you, and we'll not judge you if you can't answer them, don't worry.
Okay.
So how do you monitor which SQL jobs are running in Ops Manager? Or firstly, can you, and then how do you do that?
So yes, and there are two ways you can do that. So off the shelf, a SQL agent job actually logs an event in the application event log to tell Windows pass or fail. The SQL management pack for Operations Manager actually picks that up by default. So you're going to get a rule-based alert of pass or fail. What you don't get is stateful monitoring. We actually don't discover the SQL agent jobs as instances of a class. If you enable discovery of the SQL agent job class, then your jobs are going to light up in a stateful fashion. You'll be able to look at what we call a state view and see the jobs as monitored entities in red, yellow, or green states. And you know, those will shift colors and state as the results of the last run of the job are completed. So you've got good out of the box and better if you want to turn that on. And you know, I should add that when we turn the better on, we have the capability to monitor the duration of some of our long-running jobs that we might think are prone to running over. Mm-hmm. I can go enable some alerting for that as well.
Nice. So it can be done, and there's options to configure and tweak and tailor to your specific needs.
Absolutely.
Cool. And is that all documented online? Can you find that sort of stuff?
You know, in fact, that's in the SQL Management Pack guide. So with every management...
RTFM?
Yes, RTFM. So with every management pack, you know, a guide comes with it, and you can get the guide right there in that same wizard where we pull the pack down from the catalog. There's a link to the guide, and every guide has a section called required configuration. Uh-huh. Dead simple.
Cool, excellent. So hopefully that answers your question. Now, there was another one that said along the lines of any hope for VMware environments, what shiny features will lose, what will still be available. Now, I wasn't quite sure in the context of the question, so we'll answer that as from the position of System Center managing a VMware environment. And the key thing is if we want to manage it effectively and apply some of this cool stuff we've seen in Service Manager and Orchestrator and some of the chargeback we've seen, is the visibility we need into the vSphere environment. So for instance, step one would be bringing it under management with VMM. And VMM's management of vSphere is really aimed at the day-to-day operation. It can't and isn't intended to replace vCenter. That's not the intention. But once you bring it under VMM's management control, you can apply all of the cloud cool stuff. You can apply the service template models you learned about in the previous session, and we'll hear more about, I'm sure, as we go along as well. All of the cool stuff that VMM provides at a VM level and the day-to-day management of vSphere VMs, like vMotioning them, storage vMotion, creating, shutting down, the day-to-day stuff can be managed by VMM. And if VMM has got control of vCenter and vSphere, that can pass through to Ops Manager through the connector we've established. So Ops Manager now has some visibility about your vSphere environment. But if you want the depth visibility into your vSphere environment from Ops Manager, that's where we have partners, as we mentioned earlier, who produce awesome management packs that let you see that visibility deep inside vSphere at a very granular level with the cool diagrams and dashboards that Pete talked about in the first section of today. Partners like Veeam, partners like Bridgeways, they produce management packs for VMware that you can integrate with Ops Manager. So again, when we get the visibility in Ops Manager, it all pipes into Service Manager.
Yeah, great answer. And when we get to our next look at hybrid cloud monitoring with Ops Manager, kick me under the table and remind me to show some dashboard views. I have some great dashboard views for Active Directory and Exchange just to give you an idea of the flexibility of that new dashboard view in 2012.
So permission to kick you, is that?
Yes, not too hard.
Right, okay.
I don't want to cry in front of the camera. But.
Okay. So, do you want to take us away? Do you want to give us through this to get us through the next module?
So hybrid cloud, the SQL. We're going to talk about App Controller and how that enables us to see our private and public cloud resources through a single pane of glass. We'll look at what we can do, you know, not only in terms of managing private cloud assets, you know, the virtual machines and the services, and you know, what we've deployed in Azure infrastructure as a service in this case, but how we even have some flexibility to move resources between the two with Service Pack 1 for System Center 2012. We're going to talk about Windows Azure. We're going to dip our toe in that pool of public cloud. Azure may be a new topic for you. There's a great jump start called Intro to Azure Infrastructure as a Service, IaaS, out on the MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com website. We will give you a brief primer a little bit later in the day. We're going to assume that maybe some of you out there are IT pros and Azure hasn't been an area of focus. You know, out in the field as an IT pro myself, as a systems integrator, I find that with the release of Azure Infrastructure as a Service with persistent virtual machine capabilities in Azure, this is now suddenly a much more interesting topic for the IT pros, for my crowd, as I call them. So, and I'd imagine the same for you. I know you're out there evangelizing.
Yeah, it's just another part of the story that's just coming. Things are just now slotting together in an incredibly integrated way, as we'll explore through the demos and through the slides. But people are now talking about IaaS a lot more and how it can be a natural extension of their existing infrastructure and how they can use it in new and exciting ways for different projects, for time-sensitive projects, for location-sensitive projects, whatever it may be. And we'll explore some of those scenarios later on. But yeah, it's certainly people are liking and understanding where it's going.
Yeah, so in 60 seconds, let's answer that question. Why should I care about Azure? You know, as an IT pro, why does Azure matter to me? You know, in many cases, Azure can be less expensive than hardware. It can allow us to pay as we go, you know, for limited run projects, for example. If I want to spin up a test environment to test one of my applications and then just destroy it when I'm done, this is great for bringing up limited run resources. Mm-hmm. You know, Microsoft have dropped the prices substantially. They mentioned a few weeks ago, so we're now billing, you know, by the minute and we're not charging for off. You turn a virtual machine off, it's not being, you know, calculated against you. So
from a compute perspective, that's right. Yeah, and the price match towards Amazon as well, so more competitively priced than Amazon, which is a big competitor in that space from a Microsoft standpoint.
Yeah, and lots of great use cases. Test and dev, project, your product eval, System Center testing. You can spin up System Center in Azure to give that a test drive if you like. Mm-hmm. And we might want to look at off-premise hosting of a more persistent nature. This is a way to sort of put our foot into both an on-premise cloud, a private cloud as we call it, and into the public to create this hybrid capability. So we'll begin to kind of look at some of the facets of that as we move through the next couple of sessions here. So let's talk about App Controller. We looked at App Controller briefly from, you know, through the lens of our end user and more in our first session around private cloud, just appreciating which interfaces made sense for self-service for the different audiences. But we want to get a little deeper into what Azure actually brings to the party when we talk about a hybrid cloud. So, you know, it gives us that easy administration. So we've got the web-based interface we saw, but it allows us to connect not only into our virtual machine manager deployments, and to be clear, multiple virtual machine manager deployments, also into our public cloud deployments. I can snap Azure subscriptions into my App Controller interface, and now I can see the VMs I have deployed in Azure, what I have on-premise.
Just VMs?
Well, so my services as well, right? So my service templates, you know, what we spent so much time extolling the virtues of and building and provisioning in our first session on private cloud, I can easily deploy and manage those in App Controller. And when we talk about Azure a little later, briefly in the day, you'll actually see a lot of parallels, I think, between that service template concept and Azure, for sure. But the real key with App Controller is it gives us hybrid capability, but it hides a lot of that technology. So we're really just focusing on the virtual assets that we're deploying on top of the cloud fabric that we developed earlier. We're really just leveraging the fruits of our labor at this point. We've designed and built the cloud fabric. We created our VM and service templates and our application profiles, like for SQL and for web deploy. We created our self-service user roles and assigned access to those assets. I really like to think of App Controller as the presentation layer. This is how I show that to my users in a way that's easy for them to consume.
Exactly, and that is exactly App Controller. It is that consumption element interface for what you're building through VMM. VMM is the engine. When you provision a new VM or a service through App Controller isn't doing the work. It's just telling VMM to kick into gear and start provisioning that VM or that template or whatever. And it's a powerful portal to do that, rich in Silverlight. It's an intuitive interface that's not too overwhelming in the sense, as we'll see it shortly, but not too overwhelming in the sense of lots of different options and configuration choices that just generally shouldn't be there in that scenario. It needs to be simple. And if users who aren't there from a virtual machine perspective to consume that stuff, then we want to present them just with their relevant information. And it's important, people who've come from a historical system center background, they used to be the VMM self-service portal that shipped in box. Then there was SSP 2.0, which kind of was an add-on that you didn't use SSP 1, you used SSP 2 instead. Where does this sit in relation to those?
Yeah, so where it sits now is that VMM 1.0 portal that we remember that sort of graduated into the 2012 family originally is gone. So really, App Controller is our lightweight self-service experience. Service Manager self-service portal is our ITIL integrated enterprise workflow capable portal. So yeah.
Where I always think of Service Manager portal and App Controller is the differences are I ask in one, so I ask Service Manager, I get in App Controller. So I ask for VMs and clouds through the self-service portal in Service Manager, and if IT approves it, I go and get them and use them in App Controller.
Yeah, so App Controller becomes more of a management interface.
Correct, but and a consumption, yeah.
Yeah, but for that initial provisioning, if we want the self-service to have that element of approval of the workflow, so we're checking a box that this is allowed, that's really where Service Manager shines at that point. So let's just talk about what we can connect to with App Controller. So Virtual Machine Manager I alluded to, and I can connect to more than one VMM environment. So it's not unusual in a large enterprise. We're going to have multiple VMM deployments, particularly if we're spanning a lot of geography and scale, for sure. Now, there's also a new element in SP1 that we can connect into our hosting providers using the service provider framework. So imagine that private cloud that we built on premise in our first session on private cloud. You can go out to many of the hosting partners that work with Microsoft to purchase your own hosted private cloud, so to speak, and using the new service provider framework, it's just a RESTful web service. In fact, SPF, as we call the framework, is a RESTful web service you can install it right along with Orchestrator. So reminds me a lot of the Orchestrator web service from an architecture perspective in that they're both OData RESTful services, but just another element we can snap in. So going into that hybrid capability, I've got my on-prem private cloud, I have my hosted private cloud, which really speaks to the fact that private cloud is a computing model. It's not about location, right? So perfectly okay if I have a private cloud that's not sitting in my data center, that I have that hosted out somewhere else.
In your data center, for instance. If I've got it on mine and I want to connect with yours and use some of your spare capacity, SPF is going to allow us to do that. It's effectively a bridge between our, if we didn't want to perhaps use Azure for whatever reason.
Yeah, exactly. And so as we step across that hosting, hosted private cloud threshold, all the way into Azure, App Controller allows us to plug our Azure subscriptions into App Controller. What I love about that is the role-based access control App Controller gives us at that point, because we're not leveraging, our Microsoft accounts anymore, our live IDs. We're now leveraging Active Directory, the foundation for identity management we've all been using for a long time, and App Controller takes me away. When we got App Controller for the first time, I looked at that and said, "Wow, I'm not going to worry about live IDs anymore. I'm going to use Active Directory." So it's really valuable in that case. I think from a provisioning perspective, it makes the process easier for me because I understand Active Directory and where my resources are. And with Service Pack 1 for System Center 2012, we saw some of those additional capabilities lit up. So we have capabilities with the hosted cloud. We have some migration capabilities. I can actually take a virtual machine in my VMM environment, and I can migrate that to Azure.
Not live.
Yeah, it's actually a two-step process. We'll get into the dirty details in just a bit. It's really quite easy, that migration piece, but I'll actually show you how that works, and we'll kick one off.
Yep.
Set a migration in motion, so to speak. But bottom line, we've got a single pane of glass in App Control that allows us to manage across private, our hosted private, our public cloud resources and even gives us some migration capability now. So we're definitely taking some steps to tie together these environments visually now, and this really isn't the end of the story, but really just the beginning as we kind of dip our toe in the water, so to speak. So let's jump over and have a look at our app controller portal and, you know, how we snap in these additional resources and access some of our private and public cloud resources. So I'm on the overview screen in my app controller portal here. So this is just my default interface, and I'll just zoom in here for the senior members of our audience, like myself. And you'll see here I've got some stats up at the top that tell me what I have in terms of virtual machine manager, you know, private cloud snapped into this environment. You see I have a public cloud in there with some virtual machines that are running out in Azure. And then you'll notice over here we have the hosted option, and you know, that's really just allowing me to hit a button and add that web service to plug into the hoster, you know, the hosted environment out at my hoster of my choice. So I'm going to go down to connections here. You'll see that I have my VMM connection and my Azure connection. You want to sort of get comfortable with those different icons there. So we have the blue and then the Azure blue or sky blue there for the Azure icon, because as we look at our clouds, we're going to see our VMM clouds. And so here you're going to see we're just leveraging the fruits of our previous work. You see my Hyper-V and vSphere clouds, and you see you know, Pete's MSDN subscription here. So I've just snapped in my Visual Studio Ultimate subscription, which is suddenly, you know, taking me much further for my dollar at this point with the new changes.
Yeah, and if everyone does have an MSDN subscription of the appropriate level, you've got access to some of the Azure capabilities as part of that, you know, a certain number of VMs, certain amount of storage per month included. So, yeah, good value there.
Yeah, so I'm just going to click on one of these icons here to add my connections. You'll notice my next steps under common here. I have connect to a VMM server and cloud, connect into my Azure sub. I can add network file shares, which will allow my developers to compose applications in Visual Studio, and then to put the files, the apps for Azure come in a file pair. I can actually deploy, you know, apps into Azure platform.
That's interesting, because we did have a question earlier on, actually. How do I design an app? So we're not necessarily answering that, but if you were designing an app for Azure, you would design it through Visual Studio, ideally. I mean, there are other tools, but Visual Studio is a great option for building an app for Azure, and a lot of guidance out there on the web for that. And if you wanted to push that app up to Azure, then you could just go via the regular Azure portal, which we'll see a bit later on, and you could go that way if you weren't using App Controller. But here, as Pete said, if you shared out a network share and you made that available to the appropriate dev team, then they could push it up, or you could push it up this way as well. So lots of different ways, like we saw before, you know, there's multiple ways to achieve that single goal. So yeah, hopefully that kind of gives you an idea, but we can't obviously tell you how to code an app in this section. That's beyond my Jedi abilities, unfortunately.
All right. The value of specialization. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to click that connect to virtual machine manager. I'm just going to show you the UI that you get for connecting in. It's really nothing fancy. We have to put in a friendly name for the connection.
Now, just to set context as well here, you're an admin in App Controller's context here,
yeah,
are you?
That's a great point. You know, we're tailoring this based on the user role. So my self-service users are going to see, you know, their cloud. Mm. As an administrator, I'm going to see a little bit more. So I'll try to be mindful to point out what your tenants are not going to see, because we don't want our customers seeing all of this admin level detail, right?
Correct,
So this is only for the administrators amongst us. Mm. And you'll see here I can give it a friendly name, put the FQDN of my VMM server in here, and see, it's going to automatically pull in the certificate, so I don't worry much about that. I hit OK, and now I have a connection. Windows Azure, slightly different, and I'm going to be, you know, kind of sensitive here and not show you my Azure subscription, because it lights up a little more detail than I want to share. I can put my Azure sub in here. I can get the subscription ID out of the Azure portal. We'll take a little trip through the Azure portal this afternoon after meal break, just to make sure you kind of get a sense for where we find information in that portal if you've never seen it. It's an HTML5, very simple portal, but I paste my subscription ID in there. I'm going to get my management certificate. So you can create your own management certificate and upload it. You can do that with the MakeCert utility or actually in IIS Manager on 2012, mm-hmm. I can do that. So
there's a few blog posts and stuff out there and documentation on how you make that certificate, but it's just something you effectively browse to locally and upload to Azure, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a relatively painless process, and you only have to do it once per subscription. So.
Yeah, and then you'll see I put in the password I give that management certificate when I create it.
So the private key, yeah.
Yeah, so. And so once that is done, when I come to my cloud, so as an administrator, I'm seeing all my clouds, and I'll show you here that basically I have my VMM clouds, I have my Azure cloud. So as I use some of these menus up here, you see I have a deploy menu at the top. It's going to give me a choice of where I would like to deploy things. You know, if I'm deploying a service or a virtual machine.
How much capacity have you got as a user?
So
or
I have
an admin.
Yeah, so as an admin, I can basically deploy to whatever I have rights to down there in the.
So you've unlimited, effectively an unlimited.
Yeah,
boundary.
Yeah, I kind of have a blank checkbook, so to speak.
Nice. You need one with your cloud prices, though.
Well, yeah, so you would need a big checkbook if you're using my sample prices, because you will get some pushback, I think. So when I hit that deploy button, here's the interface I get. I'm getting basically a little. A clickable interface. Anything that's blue is a hyperlink. It means I can click on it and provide some element of configuration. So I'm going to start in that private cloud area where it defaulted to based on where I was highlighting, and you'll notice here it shows me all of my clouds. So we'll look at the Hyper-V cloud for just a moment, and then I'm going to switch gears and give you a look into the public side. So you notice here just telling me, hey, you're switching clouds. I'm going to wipe all of your existing information, which is fine. And now I have that template node at the bottom here. So when I hit template, it's going to show me my templates. Here is that web app template that we created in part one of our session. So this was a two-tier template. We had a web deploy application, that little IIS application. We had our databases on the back end. I have multiple versions of that template. I'm a big fan of using identical names with just the release number to differentiate those versions. And, of course, using the description field on all activities to give myself little reminders about what we have going on. And now you see when I pick that template, it's breaking out some additional configurable elements. You notice that network is not blue. Well, if you can't notice, it's not, because there's nothing for me to configure there. The networking, you know, the network connectivity from the virtual into the logical network is done in our template. So we set that and we've forgotten about it because we worked with our network team, established how our logical network would interface with the physical, and then we created our VM networks, you'll remember, which connect us to the logical. So I'm going to click on this VM instance. You'll notice I have some configurability here. Like if I want to go in here and override the computer name, by default it was using that hash masking to just dynamically generate a number based on what's available. I can come down here and provide some name and description if I like.
There's a question that's just come in, yeah, but just a quick one. More so to do with hooking app controller up to the different sources or places, platforms that you can run VMs. So what's the basic difference between a connection and a subscription? When do you use one or the other? And I think a subscription is more to reflect the fact that that is how you access Azure in general. You subscribe, you get a subscription. Whereas the connection is more VMM flavored, back to from app controller to VMM. They are both connections in a sense, but would you add to that?
No, I think that's a perfect description. If you look in the UI, the connect link I hit actually said connect to Virtual Machine Manager, and the subscription basically said add an Azure subscription. So we're on a pay-as-you-go model with Azure, we are subscribers by definition, because I'm subscribing to that service and paying as I go, where VMM is managing my hosted infrastructure in my hosted data center or my local data center to manage my Hyper-V and VMware and Zen Server assets.
Yeah. So. Okay, so it's just a terminology thing rather than a...
Exactly. So I can scroll down here, provide a cost center if it makes sense. I can tag these images for some searchability. Anything that's required where I don't have a value and I've started to do something, it's going to ask me to complete what I started there. And then I can kick that off and begin deployment. So I just want to point out here, if the deploy button is gray, it means you've forgotten something, and that's what this little asterisk is all about.
You did that on purpose, didn't you?
Well, I did, actually. but it allows us to come in here, and you see it just wants me to name my service, so I can give this my...
So that's more of a descriptive name to highlight what that service is perhaps providing.
That's exactly what this is. So I want this to be descriptive. I tend to sort of incorporate the template name in here, like web app in this example. I might include an environmental indicator. I'm certainly going to give it a better description than that. It's pulling that description right out of the service template, so I'm going to mention this is, you know, the user acceptance testing environment, for example.
It's inevitably going to be high priority, isn't it? I mean, is there any other type of request, really?
You know, everybody's well, all of my requests are high priority. You know, I don't know what Matt's are, but mine are high priority. I know that. So.
And the cost center, where does that play a piece? Can that feed into Service Manager?
So cost center can feed into Service Manager, into our CMDB. So when these service instances are deployed, and through our connector framework, by connecting VMM into Ops Manager, we get this information into our CMDB. I can use some advanced reporting capabilities to present this information out by cost center. So certainly I could use my my chargeback capability to dig some of that information out of the OLAP cube in the background there to surface that information and organize my chargeback reporting by cost center. Mm. That's something we frequently see in the field, you know, particularly when we get into the more, the deeper end of the pool, the more advanced side of self-service provisioning. If we're in Service Manager, it's rare that when we're working in the Service Manager self-service portal that we're not also using cost centers at that point to start really giving us some flexibility in how we carve up the reporting on the back end to show from a business perspective, you know, who and where the money is being spent, who our big consumers are. So to speak. So I'm going to hit the deploy button and forget about this for just a moment, and that'll go ahead and kick off the job. Now, one thing you'll notice about the jobs in App Controller is my status is going to be very simple. It's in progress, successful, failed. I don't see all of the detail that I see in my VMM console. If I'm an administrator and I want to see the line item progress of the job of deploying a service template that has multiple tiers and applications, I need to go over to my VMM admin console and get the heavy detail information over there. So let's just look from a public cloud perspective too here. I can dig into I can right click my Azure subscription that I added with my subscription ID and my certificate and my password. I can deploy to Azure, and just as a first look, I only have one Azure subscription, so I'm going to leave that just like that. And my deployment type here I have to choose, so I'm going to drill down and just begin to share a little information about Azure. So I can upload virtual disks. We have to upload them in VHD format, so I can create my own templates if I want and upload them right into Azure. So infrastructure as a service gives me that VM durability.
So it's VHDs, not VHDXs today.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was driving at with the VHD, is we're not supporting VHDXs in Azure, we're doing the VHDs. But I want to call out what this images option means here. So we can upload our own templates into Azure, but what does images mean? Well, Microsoft has a gallery they provide of images, and there are some Microsoft images, and then what we call partner images. So you'll notice here we have images for Windows Server of various flavors. You'll notice SharePoint and BizTalk. So, why would we do that?
Why would we do that? Well, the whole point of these images, I was thinking BizTalk specifically or templates. So the thing around the Azure images and why we do that is think about how you could accelerate deployment. Think about the SQL Server examples, the SharePoint, the BizTalks. For me to rapidly spin up a more or less pre-configured, so I'd still need a little bit of effort to finish off the configuration to make it specific to my environment. But having those pre-built images means that I could evaluate or test or utilize in production, because if they're in that list of images there, they're supported by Microsoft to run in Azure, so SQL, a SharePoint, BizTalk, and again, I can accelerate rapidly how quickly I can adopt or embrace or test or evaluate some of those new technologies. So it's very useful to have those pre-built. The cost I pay to utilize those images is all included with the license cost of Azure, the amount I pay per VM or whatever it may be, for the storage, for the networking, etc. So it can rapidly accelerate just how quickly I can embrace, use, and start to integrate those workloads, those applications into the rest of my environment, which we'll touch on a bit later on when we talk about Azure specifically. But it's there, just like templates are there in VMM, to accelerate, to standardize, and to simplify deployment.
Exactly. So well said. You notice how my question was so ambiguous. Matt wasn't quite sure if it was a question or a statement. So contrary to any rumors you may hear...
Why would you deploy BizTalk?
Contrary to any rumors you may hear, English is, in fact, my first language. Yeah. So let's have a look at
And we love BizTalk. Just to clarify, this is anyone from BizTalk watching.
BizTalk Lover 97.
Yep.
At Outlook.com. So let's look at our UI again here and look at these templates. So I just want to point out the value of these templates. You see a SharePoint template, you see a BizTalk template. These are both SQL-driven applications mm-hmm. in some respects. I can deploy a SysPrep SQL server. I can deploy a SharePoint template. And then all I have to do is run the farm setup wizard. So you can have a SharePoint farm in less than an hour. That's an hour with 30 or 40 minutes of coffee time in there, which I am all about.
It's a big coffee.
That's a lot of coffee. And so I'm just going to grab a basic image here and we'll deploy something. Now, you notice there are different releases here. We see server 2008 with an April flag, with a May flag. They leave multiple versions because if we're deploying in a scale-out fashion, I may have a web farm or a SharePoint farm out there where my front end is scaling out with multiple smaller front ends. Having those versions can be important because I may want to be careful about matching my patch levels
yep.
across, right?
Yep.
So if I deploy, if in April I deploy using the April image, in May I may say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and deploy with the April image and just bring it up to the same patch level as its neighbors. Same sort of experience here. When I pick I make a decision, I get the links to give me the configurable elements here. So I need to come... you'll begin to make choices. So,
what is this cloud services all about? Are these like containers for your VMs, or are they? How does this work in the Azure context?
Yeah, and you're going to see this visually a little bit. You're going to touch on it again in Module 3 after the meal break. But a cloud service is a container around our virtual machines, and every virtual machine we deploy to Azure needs to go into a cloud service, very much like very parallel to that service template concept. I can have a cloud service that has one or more VMs in there, so I can potentially scale out in a very similar fashion to what I see in that service template construct. So it's different but parallel in the capabilities. And we'll talk briefly about some of the advanced capabilities there, like load balancing and so forth.
There's a quick question come in around the implications of not being able to use VHDX yet in Azure. Does it mean that we can't move VMs from 2012 Hyper-V on-prem to Azure? Well, the answer is if they're in VHDX format, they wouldn't be able to move without a little bit of work. Don't forget, with Hyper-V virtual machines that are VHDX, providing they're less than 2 terabytes in size, we can convert them to VHD during a period of downtime, so it's not a live operation, but we can convert them to VHD and then up they go to Azure. Alternatively, you could create VMs natively with VHD on Hyper-V. Maybe you've brought them from a previous version of Hyper-V onto 2012. Those VHDs, again, are perfectly compatible with Azure. But today, VHDX as a native format isn't supported with Azure at this time.
Yeah, good point. So we're going to look at the deployment. I'm going to give this just a name. This is my deployment configuration, telling Azure where I'm going to deploy this VM to. So I'll do this to the production environment on this one. And I have some configurable elements of my virtual machine, so nothing too groundbreaking here. I'm going to give it a name. Now, you notice the instance size there. Azure gives me some pre-sized
like T-shirt sizes. VMs.
Yes, very much like T-shirt sizes. I like to start with extra small and work my way up. No, I will not try on an extra small T-shirt for the audience.
Yes.
When we migrate virtual machines from VMM to Azure, the smallest size you can select is actually small. It'll actually prompt you and say, hey, if you're going to come from on-prem up here, we need to start with small, and we'll work our way up.
Yeah. I think the extra small in Azure is something like, is it half a core or something? I can't remember. We'll see it later
It's a shared core is what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, so that isn't in VMM.
So I'm configuring our VMM properties, tell the audience what an availability set is, and let's just cover that off.
So an availability set in VMM's terms,
right,
an availability set, just kind of putting App Controller and Azure to the side for 1 minute. Imagine you're running an on-premise private cloud, and you are What's important to you if you were virtualizing, for instance, a guest cluster? Imagine you're virtualizing a SQL always-on cluster, or a availability group in that terminology. So you've got two virtualized SQL servers that ideally, they have a relationship, they're clustered, let's call it, from a SQL perspective. What we don't want to get into a situation, if we can absolutely avoid it, is that those VMs reside on the same physical node. So we've got virtual machines that we want to keep apart, but we don't want to keep them on the same physical node, because if a physical node failed, both SQL VMs as part of that availability group would be down, and that wouldn't be good. So an availability set in VMM is an easy way for you as an administrator to essentially say, okay, these VMs are part of this availability set, always keep them apart, or at least as much as you can, please keep them apart. And VMM will use Hyper-V live migration capabilities to move those VMs apart if you move them together. So if you try and move one onto the same host, VMM will move it back, and there'll be a tug of war of the VM. But ultimately, it's trying to do its best to keep them apart. Now, in the event of a failover, if you lost all of your nodes, bar one, and the VMs failed over so they had to run on the same node, it's going to do that. It's not going to not start that second SQL VM just because it's going to run on the same node as the first one. It's a soft rule, if you will, but that's what availability sets are providing in VMM. So hopefully that sets you up for the Azure side of it as well. But
yeah, and so now we'll have a look down here at the disk area, and I want to point out we have a destination container for the image. So there's actually we have what we call a storage account in Azure. We'll look at that a bit later, and our disks need to go into a storage container. So I'm going to pick an existing container, as I have a couple out here. So there I'm picking my storage account. You'll notice my storage account is the first node. I've got a VHD container there, and that is done. I'm going to scroll down and just see what else I have to configure. Looks like I need to put a password in here. I will just mention briefly that some of the common passwords you might use in test environments are going to be forbidden by Azure. It will not let you use, for example, the capital P at SS, etc., that you see in Microsoft training courses. You'll actually see some hard stops in the portal. And in this case, I actually use the user must change password at next logon, so I could uncheck that if I wanted to. That's just giving me another layer of security, because I can provision the virtual machine, but if I'm not using it, then I don't even have to know what the password is. So now I have a deployment that'll be going in progress. Now, sometimes I find that this failed right away.
I think I know why that is, because this happened to me yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, it's password first logon parameter deprecated. You know, I don't normally set that. And I said, I made a note to myself, I'm going to show this to you guys.
Yep.
And there it happened.
So I've
actually already got a virtual machine deployed in Azure where I didn't check that box because I dislike changing passwords, because I'm lazy, Matt says. So I'm just going to look at my virtual machines here. And you'll notice that when I look at the service, you'll notice my connection is Windows Azure here. So I have multiple VMs running in Azure already. If I've established endpoints up there to connect, I'll be able to RDP to these. I'll be able to remote desktop. So that's already done. Now we're going to talk about the migration capabilities as we go on, and I'll kick off a migration of a virtual machine from App Controller, from our VMM install up to Azure just a bit later. But I wanted to just give you sort of a first taste of what that interface looks like. Because we really want you to walk away, even if you haven't looked at Azure before today, we want you to walk away from this session today feeling reasonably well-armed to go ahead and get started. So you'll have some of those basic concepts under your belt, and you can learn as you go. So App Controller has the concept of a library. We can add a folder, which enables some deployment capabilities. It also allows us to provide self-service libraries that are perhaps read-only, for example, for some of our more stringently locked down self-service users. I can also provide writable libraries so people can collaborate. So if I grant the permission to share and receive, I'm enabling collaboration between users. That's something we would see commonly amongst our tenant admins, to give them capability to work in that respect as they carve up and consume their cloud capacity in a way that makes sense for their business unit or their if they're an external customer, their business. the Azure Image Gallery, we had a brief look there. So there's, you know, several Microsoft-based image there. We saw Windows 2008 R2 2012, the 2008 R2 and 2012 flavors of SQL, SharePoint 2013, the latest and greatest BizTalk, but also several partner images. So you see there CentOS, OpenSUSE, SLES, Ubuntu. So these partner images also being provided into the gallery, so I can deploy those from App Controller just as easily.
And they are all supported on-premise on Hyper-V as well, just to add. So if you want to deploy them on-prem and run them on Hyper-V, they run great, they're optimized, and they've got the relevant drivers and so on inside those guest operating systems to really fly on Hyper-V. So if that's what you wanted to do as well.
Yeah, and if you were with us in session one on Private Cloud earlier this week, we did also talk about the heterogeneous support in System Center, and really now that's a multi-component, multi-generational effort that started 5 years ago or more, six years ago that I remember with Operations Manager 2012, where we saw monitoring of cross-platform, and now we see those capabilities across Hyper-V and VMM and Ops Manager and Configuration Manager. So it's really just spreading out, and the capabilities are just growing deeper with every...
And especially in R2, when you start to look at some of the stuff we talked about at TechEd North America, and we'll reiterate at TechEd EMEA next week around Linux support on Hyper-V, there's a lot of cool stuff coming around bringing parity to, or as close to parity with what we give to our Windows guest inside Linux. And we're doing some cool stuff around backup as well, making backup for Linux simplified and really powerful, powered by Hyper-V and managed by System Center. So there's some cool stuff going.
Great. And I know some of those TechEd sessions are going to be streamed. So
yeah, and they're all recorded on demand as well for the last one as well.
So let's just keep going down that hybrid road and keep the discussion moving here. So thinking about deploying and managing VMs and services in private cloud. So definitely you see with App Controller, we can support multiple VMM environments. We can deploy and manage VMs in the hosted private cloud. So we'll talk about the service provider framework briefly. It's not going to be relevant for most of you, I think, but for those of you that jump into a hosted private cloud scenario, or for any of the hosters out there amongst us, this is a topic that you may definitely want to go spend some more time with as it opens up some new capabilities for you. So we took a first look at the Azure Image Gallery. So you saw some of the plain Windows, SQL, Tier 1 application, and cross-platform images. And finally, with Service Pack 1, we have this capability to move virtual machines from private cloud to Azure. And what I mean by that is I can take a virtual machine, I can store it in the library in a share.
In an on-premise library.
Yeah, in an on-premise library. Excellent point. But it basically means I need to shut it down, save it, and then it's a move operation is what we call it, and that'll move it up to Azure. But I'm controlling all of my access from here, so I'm configuring my self-service access down in the fabric. And with App Controller, I'm just leveraging that capability. There's not much configuration for my on-premise self-service with App Controller, because we did that with the self-service user roles in VMM. I'm really just now surfacing what we've provisioned down there. On the Azure side, I'm basically surfacing that subscription here and granting some permissions. I'll actually show you what you need to do to grant permissions to an Azure sub, because there is a little bit of configuration because we're bridging a gap there. In Azure, we're using our Microsoft accounts, our live IDs, to grant access out there.
If you went natively.
Yeah, if you went native. If you go native, that could have a lot of definitions, couldn't it? So we're not really going to go down that road right now. But what I'm doing here is doing some extra configuration to use App Controller to integrate my Active Directory into my provisioning capabilities into Azure. So I'm tying a subscription back to users and AD back to a place where we're all comfortable, frankly. So
you can have a subscription in Azure with multiple live IDs, but you want to manage this perhaps in a more corporate control way, and integrate with AD is the way to do that.
Yeah, and that's really just my perspective. I couldn't wait to get to Active Directory,
so I really
try to drive that, because it's a paradigm that we're all familiar with, and I think reduces our expense and our effort. So that's all fairly well handled. We'll jump over and look at how we delegate that access on the Azure side here quickly. So I'll just jump out into my Azure environment. Let me see if I can command PowerPoint to let me into my environment. But I'm going to go back to that the app controller self-service portal. Again, I'm an administrator, so I'm going to see a little more. So when I come down here into the settings, as an administrator, you see it mentions I can manage my connections and so forth. And for my self-service users, they're not going to see quite as much. They're going to get less flexibility in what they see here because we're going to limit them to really just dealing with what we've provisioned to them. So this whole settings idea is going to be kind of a blank slate for them. So don't be worried that your folks are going to have any problem. But back here, I want to take you back to the little next steps area. Back here on the overview, just our home screen, you'll see there is a create a user role option. So we're now looking at the capabilities that are specific to my Azure users. So I'm just going to be very simple. You notice I've got some read-only capability if I want to make these folks, strictly read people rather than being able to deploy. That's really what read means. You can look at what's deployed, but you can't deploy it. So there might be like an IT operations manager or a development manager, and they're not deploying anything, but maybe they're the one that has to justify what their team has deployed. So this gives them some visibility out there. So I can put my group here. So I'm just going to put something simple here. You're typically going to tie this to something more specific than domain users. But what this does, once you define this role-based access, this becomes a tier one task to go add a user to a group to give them access to these resources. Now look at my scope tab here. If I just drill down, scope is where I tell App Controller which Azure subscriptions I'm lighting up here. You notice I don't have the service provider framework plugged in here. I don't have a hosted your private cloud in this case. So I check my Azure subscription, hit OK. And now I've granted some folks access into that Azure subscription based on their Active Directory identities, their membership in that group.
Can I go any more granular than that? So for instance, if we were, we are part of domain users, inevitably, and we all log into App Controller separately, whilst I see different stuff on premise with the respective clouds through the VMM connection, will I see the same stuff as you from an Azure perspective?
Well, so only to the degree I have added you to the same user role.
So if we were both part of that role you just created.
Exactly. So I can run this wizard multiple times. So I launched it again here, and I can run this wizard as many times as I need to, granting different groups of users membership to all of my Azure subscriptions or appropriate subsets. And where the lines may fall there, where I've seen them at least to this point in time fall, is we have roles where certain individuals are allowed to get into the test and development subscriptions, but the folks that are moving assets into deployment, the folks that get into the production subscriptions, that's a different group of people. So we can divide.
So you may find that there's more subscriptions to Azure that are plugged in and then individually grouped to roles within App Controller rather than having one big company-wide subscription.
Yeah, and you're seeing one subscription because that's how many subscriptions I personally use. In an organization, you're typically going to see multiple subscriptions. We'll often see development-type subscriptions. Mm-hmm. The IT pros may have their test and development environment, and then for production applications we're hosting in Azure, we'll have typically separate subscriptions there so we can cordon off access appropriately. Okay. So just as you promote, code from development to test and into prod, similar concept, I think.
Okay.
Fair to say. And fairly easy to do, as you see. It's not a complicated menu. We get it all out of that next steps menu that sits right there on our overview screen as we get into the console. A common experience. So it's not dissimilar the way we deploy resources into Azure versus how we deploy them into to App Controller, or Azure versus VMM rather. So let's talk about just the last little bit here around managing our resources. So with App Controller, we can go in, and once we've deployed, we can manage these services. So if I define a machine tier as scale out, as we saw in our first session in the series, I can come into App Controller, I can right-click that machine tier and I can initiate the scale out. I can go into the properties of a virtual machine and take snapshots. And with the role-based security in VMM, I can dictate which of these activities a self-service user is capable of initiating. So we were talking about how we want to be careful with granting snapshot capability, or checkpoints, we call them in Virtual Machine Manager, to be sure that we don't have sprawl in the form of checkpoints that are out there, you know, consuming disk space and potentially impacting performance.
There's a good question coming, actually, that I want to just call out based on the role-based side of things, just before we park that. If I've got a developer, for instance, and I want, or he or she wants to be able to deploy their service via App Controller, how many user roles and accounts do I need to create and where? Is it I create a self-service user role in VMM first, and that user is added to that group from an AD perspective? So developer one is added to that group. So now he can log into App Controller and he sees the appropriate clouds. Does he then need an App Controller login or user role associated, or is that only if he's going to really be doing Azure-related stuff?
Yeah, so let's just talk about that config straight away here. So I'm going to jump into my Virtual Machine Manager admin console. And when we configure our role-based security for our private cloud down here in the user roles area, so I have this, and I'll just open this up and we'll zoom in. I have my Contoso self-service role. This is where I'm granting access to my on-premise resources, to my Hyper-V, my vSphere, my Zen server. App Controller is really just surfacing the assets, the cloud capacity we have access to. So I don't have to configure much beyond just connecting App Controller to my my VMM server. So I'm going to walk through this wizard and define the role membership.
So that would be the developer's AD account.
This would be our developer's AD account. I scope which clouds they're going to have access to.
So it could be the dev cloud or whatever.
And you notice I have the double quota tab there. I pick two clouds, so I have quota configuration for each cloud, both at the group level and the member level, so I can keep those resource hogs in check. Make sure Matt's not hogging all my cloud resources again.
I can't afford to.
Exactly. That's right. Looking's for free. Touching's going to cost you.
Mark me read only.
So you see, I can control my VM network access here, too. So I'm controlling how my self-service users interface with the logical network we defined. Because remember, we defined logical networks for the back-end networks for storage, for live migration, for host management. And then we defined what we called our provider logical network, which is what's providing the access to our clients. And in some cases to multiple, you know, client VM networks. My resources, i.e. the templates that I want to give these folks access to, and you see we've gone to the service template side of things. Now, one thing I didn't really pound on in our first session was, you know, when do I use VM templates and when do I use service templates? And what I'll say is I use service templates even for a single VM deployment. Why do I do that? Number one, it gives me that link back to the source template from which I deployed. Number two, it gives me the option in the future that even if I don't need the advanced capabilities to light up roles and features within Windows, to deploy web deploy packages, SQL data tier apps, server, virtual applications, if I've used a service template with one virtual machine, I can always go make a copy of that service template and duplicate it and expand out. So I'm always going to go this service route, even if in maybe a self-service request offering in the service manager portal. I may tell the user they're deploying a virtual machine because, frankly, I don't care if they know what a service is. I'm giving them what they want while I'm leaving some flexibility for myself in the background. So a best practice that I've heard out of the Microsoft gurus on the product teams in the past is use service templates for everything you can. And so for me, that tends to be just about everything.
Interesting.
So bottom line, I'm going to create my self-service user role back here. Then I'm going to go from my VMM console up to App Controller. And there in the common tasks, I'm going to connect to a virtual machine manager server in cloud. So quite simply, providing a friendly name, the server name, and adding it in. That's the connectivity there. Now, where...
That wouldn't be done by the actual dev user, though. That would be done by an admin in this case.
Right. That's going to be done by the admin, the folks that are back there, building and caring for the fabric. So for the self-service user, the developer, they're going to just request, the right to participate in this shared cloud environment. Mm-hmm. The admins are going to configure the user role in VMM. They're going to connect to a virtual machine manager environment. So we can now surface those clouds and host in VMM. So where we really do any sort of user role configuration is around Azure, where we add the Azure subscriptions and then we hit the create a user role option. So for Azure, we're doing something that's kind of net new here in that we're connecting access to Azure to role-based access control that's Active Directory integrated. So two separate entities. I hope that clears up.
Yeah, I think so. There was almost a small follow-up question that came in a little bit earlier around. You mentioned that network share, where you could make it available to developers. They could drop their packages in there, and then you could push them up to the appropriate location.
Yeah.
What if you've got a situation where you've made a network share broadly available, and lots of developers have put their packages on that share? How do we control access to that share from an app controller perspective from different users? So, for instance, if I logged in, am I going to see everybody's dev package that they've pushed up there? Or am I going to just see ones? Can I control access in that way?
So you can control access to a share with NTFS permissions on the back end. That's going to be the smart way to make this happen and going to be the easy way. And then we can come in here and we can add our shares right here in this interface so they pop in.
Right.
So that's going to give us...
A core Windows network file control.
Yeah. So use file access, you know, permissioning as you're accustomed to it today, and don't let people put, you know, applications and shares where you don't want them to work. If you want to control, let's say your situation is not that easy, so you don't live in a perfect world like Matt does. I can give all of my developers access to the share, but what you may recall with the user role is I have the capability to make some users read-only. So maybe I can give them access to the share to put their app in there. They can come look and see that their application has been deployed, but I don't give them, you know, access to come up here and deploy applications out of that share from their cohorts that may not be appropriate. So,
alternatively, if you didn't want to use the network shares, I guess you could ask the developer to package up that application if it's a web app as an MS deploy, or package it with Server App V, which is another capability within VMM. And that would then form part of a template, which would be controlled on a user-by-user basis as part of the cloud.
Yeah. So, and that's more of the on. That's more of the private cloud version,
correct,
right?
Yeah, the on-premise versus Azure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
So in the on-prem private cloud, hosted private cloud world, we're going to use those VMM, deployment capabilities we looked at with service templates, with the three first-class application deployment technologies we saw in part one. Of our series.
Okay.
So slightly different configuration tasks, as you see, based on whether we're working with on-premise or elsewhere. So again, we can control down at what we call the action level, what a user is capable of doing. So stopping, starting, pausing virtual machines, mounting ISOs, opening RDP connections, etc. That's all controllable at the action level down in the virtual machine manager user role subscription. So I wanted to talk to you about the migration capability. So we're talking about how in Service Pack 1 of System Center 2012, we have the capability to migrate a virtual machine from private to public cloud with App Controller. So we had a little discussion about, you know, some of the sort of restrictions there, one being that this is a strictly VHD operation today, right? We're not supporting VHDX files in the public cloud today. There's another little stipulation you're going to get when you try to migrate a virtual machine that you need to start with at least the small template size. So if I look at the virtual machines out here that I have running, the first step to migrating a virtual machine from App Controller, from Virtual Machine Manager through App Controller up to Azure, is I have to store that virtual machine somewhere. So I'm going to have to shut it down. So I'll shut one. Well, these are actually public, but what I'll do is right-click and shut one down. I have one shut down for you and in a share that I've created. Now, once you have a virtual machine in a share...
this is an on-premise share.
It's an on-premise share, but basically... I have shares that I've already created and I've stored my virtual machine. So how do I want to say this? We've got a default library share in Virtual Machine Manager, right? I have to create a separate share for these to be...
There has to be a cloud share the context of VMM and App Controller.
Right, yeah. So I've got to create a share where they can put these these extra files. So we can't allow folks to store their saved virtual machines in my primary library share. So you see down here what I've created is a separate library share. I'll zoom in on that. That is for my I've got separate library space for my stored virtual machines, and there you see a stored virtual machine. So it's quite literally just been shut off and put into the library. And then from that point, it's now in a state that we can migrate that virtual machine up to Azure. Now, what I find with the process of migrating virtual machines up to Azure is that sometimes my connectivity is not perfect, at least in my environment. So I find sometimes as this migration process is going on, I don't get. I'll find that the process fails, that the connection just dies for whatever reason. And when that happens, I'll come in and do a refresh and go check Azure to make sure that something didn't actually fail. Because I've had some where the job tells me it fails, and then I come up here and I look, and the job has actually succeeded. So out in the field, Matt, just to ask you for some perspective here, are you seeing a lot of interest in that migration feature and that capability to migrate assets from on-premise up into the Azure cloud, and what sort of use cases are you seeing around that?
I think it just varies from customer to customer. With Azure only just coming out, Azure IaaS only just coming out of preview, in the last month or so, it's still early days in that Azure integrated world that we're now bringing to market through System Center and 2012 and SP1, and that will enhance as we go forward to R2. So I think that people are still learning that the functionality is there to take that VM up to from on-prem to the public cloud. I think the biggest question people give back, and it relates to kind of what you were saying there, is A, how long is it going to take? And it was actually a question that came up in the chat window earlier on, is how long is it going to take for me to get a VM of size X up to Azure? And the answer to that is, it's a bit of a piece of string question, because if you've got a big VM, what's your connection speed? How long is it going to take is ultimately going to be determined by how quick you can get that data. It is essentially a copy over that network between you and Azure. So that may take a significant period of time. If it's a big virtual machine, it may not take that long. If it's smaller. The other question we get is, what about cost? Do I have a cost associated with pushing a VM up to Azure, even if I don't choose to use it when it gets there, even if I just want to store it as a template in Azure to maybe use in the future? Do I pay for that process? Because a lot of these public cloud services, you pay a network-related fee. With Azure, you don't pay for pushing data into Azure. So when I push that virtual disk up there, whether it's a gig, 10 gig, 100 gig, it doesn't matter. I'm not paying for that. So it's purely just the time it takes to actually get it up there into Azure from your app controller library. And there's not a lot we can necessarily do to accelerate that. It's just your connection from your place of work, your data center, wherever that may be, into Azure itself. But now that people realize that the functionality is there, they can take those investments they've made and push a template up there for the dev team to use more flexibly. Maybe there's a capacity situation internally where you've no more capacity of your physical infrastructure to run the dev team's new VMs or new projects for marketing or whatever. Instead, you push the templates they would use up to Azure, and they can use that directly via App Controller. So there's different scenarios that we're seeing in conversations, but I think it is still quite early. Customers who are embracing Azure all up, they're going gung-ho now that they've grasp those initial concepts, the kind of things that we're talking about now, because they see value in the speed at which you can provision, the speed at which you can start to utilize the resources without needing dedicated infrastructure that you may not have budget for internally. So there's different scenarios, different situations that are occurring, I think. So
yeah, that's a good point. So just as we were talking about those application deployment technologies, some of these processes are just going to evolve over time. Mm. We will kind of grow our way into some of those capabilities to leverage the hybrid capability. It's going to be something you'll take on a use case scenario basis. I'm actually having a little trouble with connectivity into my library here, so we're going to come back to the move operation. I'll sort that out over the meal break, and we'll kick that off in the next few minutes here. because I want to show you that process. I've moved a few, and I find if I'm moving relatively small virtual machines, it does take a few minutes, so I'll kick it off and grab a coffee and come back and watch. But you get that in the jobs node in App Controller, you get that same sort of binary in progress, pass, or fail. So we're not getting deep, deep detail as to what's going on in Azure. So just as when I am executing some sort of a deployment operation with a service template in an App Controller that's pushing resources out through Virtual Machine Manager to Hyper-V or vSphere hypervisor components, when I'm deploying to Azure, if I want to get into the deep details of the job, I'll go to the Azure portal to make that more detailed analysis of what's going on at the line item level. If the VHD is being copied, if it's being spun up, etc. So I wanted to talk for a minute about visibility into Azure from a monitoring perspective. So we talked about monitoring our private cloud this morning, but you notice I didn't say anything about Azure. And as you deploy virtual machines up here, it's going to be important pretty quickly that we're able to monitor our Azure storage to make sure that we have storage capability, that the cloud services and the virtual machines we've deployed are actually online, they're healthy, they're running. Which we can do with System Center. So System Center has that out of the box in the form of the management pack for Windows Azure. Now, for a while now, we've had management packs for Operations Manager that would allow us to monitor the Azure platform as a service, so your SQL databases and your web applications. Recently here, we now have a preview of the Azure Fabric management pack, so monitoring Azure infrastructure as a service.
So it's a different management pack or an extension of the existing?
So it's a different management pack. Right. So we'll go download a net new management pack. It has a manual that comes with it that gives you that required configuration. We'll actually step through the configuration. Pretty simple to do, frankly. Gives us some new dashboards, etc. And it's still in preview. I want to be clear about that, but you can download it from the Microsoft website. But the management pack took me about 7 minutes to configure, and I think about 4 minutes of that was actually reading the manual to see what was required and what was optional. Because we'll import that management pack. We're going to download it. It's actually not available through the online web service straight from the catalog today because it's in preview. So you're going to download the file, run an MSI that will extract it out to a folder, and then you're just going to import a management pack as we've done multiple times today and in session one on Monday. But with Azure Monitoring, we need to supply some information to Operations Manager so it knows what to monitor. We're going to need to supply our Azure subscription or subscriptions, the certificate, the password to that certificate. So we've now given Operations Manager connectivity information, connection info into Azure. So in this case, your Operations Manager management server serves as a proxy into Azure for monitoring the health of those resources we've deployed into the public cloud. So there are a few scenarios that are targeted in the preview release. It's going to give us some health and availability on our role instances, our storage. We get some topology dashboards. There are a couple of dashboard views out of the box that will show us what we have deployed in the cloud. Fairly simple to set up, though. I'm going to configure the subscription, and then I am going to run a second wizard to tell Operations Manager which elements in Azure I would like it to monitor. So if I've deployed multiple cloud services with one or more virtual machines within, if I have one or more storage containers and storage accounts, I can pick and choose what I'm going to monitor in Operations Manager. So just as you will have typically resource pools for development and test and production or however you like to carve that up, with Operations Manager, so it goes, we will typically have our production monitoring environment, but also another environment that's maybe targeted at a test environment or a staging environment. So basically the two-step process is going to allow me to tell Ops Manager just which piece of the resource pool I would like it to put eyes on for me in the short term. So let's jump over into the UI Hub out, and we'll look at what we need to do once we have downloaded that management pack and extracted it. So you all, I would imagine, know what an MSI file is at this point, so that's just a Windows installer package. We download that from the Microsoft website, we extract it, we're going to go to our monitoring console, and when I get into the administration workspace, that area where I do the heavy lifting as an ops manager administrator, I have this management packs node. All I need to do is right-click in the navigation pane here on the left and select that import management pack option. So over here in the management packs list, I'll find the Azure management pack that I've imported for this specific scenario. So I have my Windows Azure pack, and there was a Windows Azure dashboard pack. So as I mentioned, you know, management packs today are written for Operations Manager 2007 because we still have many of those, you know, many folks still running 2007 out there. But the 2012 platform has an extended schema that incorporates this new dashboard view. So you'll notice we have a dashboard pack here as well, where the Azure team has provided us a management pack with a couple of default dashboards. We're going to wrap this one up by me showing you a couple of those dashboard views that I've been promising to show you all day, and to this point in time have absolutely failed to deliver on. And Matt's not blaming yet, so no. God bless him for that.
No, thank you.
So let's look at the administration workspace here. I want you to notice the last node in my navigation pane here. It says Windows Azure. This is where I'm going to take the first step, which is connecting Operations Manager with my Azure subscriptions. So when I highlight that Azure node, it's going to light up the capability here to add the Azure subscription. So I hit the Add Subscription button there. I'm going to paste in my subscription ID. Shaky at the wheel here. Has he been drinking and driving? Don't drink and drive your monitoring console. So I put in my subscription ID here, that big GUID that you get right off the Azure portal. I'm going to browse to my certificate file, and then I'm going to provide the password that I used to secure that certificate when I exported it. And the end result then, the Operations Manager will have connectivity into that Azure subscription. So I have one in here, and you can add multiple. And if I need to go update the certificate over time, I've got the capability to do that. So let's assume you filled out that wizard and you plugged in those same resources that we would leverage everywhere else we want to connect to Azure. We're going to see multiple windows into Azure today. So now let's go to step two. I'm going to go to the authoring space. Operations Manager, like Virtual Machine Manager, has templates to help us accomplish tasks more quickly. So when I imported that management pack for Azure Fabric, we have a new, what we call management pack template, or sometimes a monitoring template, we'll hear them called. And you'll notice there's one for Windows Azure Monitoring. So I run this wizard, and I'm just going to drill down into the completed configuration so you can see what all of the screens show you. These are the same screens you get with the fresh wizard. Screen number one, predictably, is the general, so I give it a friendly name. Pete's Azure subscription, you could divide this up into development, whatever logical resources make sense. So tab two, selecting cloud resources. I have the green plus sign for selecting and the blue subtract sign for removing. And I'm just going to give you the quick zoom here, and you'll notice that I have available services. These are services that I haven't already hit the add button and put down here into the monitoring area. So when I add these, I find that they show up. They are discovered within a few seconds to a couple of minutes, and then they will be monitored very shortly after that. So if you haven't already added, you hit the add button, it moves it down here. Then I can come over here and start adding virtual machines. So I've already added a few virtual machines. Same sort of interface. I get a select box where I can do free text input to search for specific virtual machines. If I have a lot of VMs in Azure, this plain text search capability of Ops Manager is a big time saver. So no wild cards or funny characters required. And then I have storage. So you remember we alluded to the fact that with storage, we have a storage account which identifies the storage resources that we have. So I have, in this case, added both of my storage accounts. So I'm monitoring storage at the account level, not the container level. So once I hit go, Ops Manager starts doing its work to discover those resources, and then I'm going to move into the monitoring workspace. So now when I come up to the monitoring workspace, I'll have a folder for Windows Azure, just as I have folders for Virtual Machine Manager, Windows Server, etc. So I'll just show you down here into Windows Azure and some of what's been discovered already in my environment. So I'm giving you the close-up look. So this is my console in your face at close distance. So you see the Windows Azure folder. I have service state. I can see my discovered cloud services, storage, virtual machines, the role instances, etc. And you'll look over here in the right-hand pane where we see the output of that view. And I can see that the services I added earliest are already monitored. Others will be monitored here pretty quickly. The only challenge you can have with that proxy-based approach is if I don't have good connectivity between the internet and my ops manager environment. So you do want to kind of bear that in mind, that if your ops manager server is in lockdown, we can't monitor Azure if we can't connect to it from the ops manager perspective. So, and yes, I have had people ask me that question. So just going to cover that off proactively. Here you see my virtual machine, same VMs we were looking at in our app controller interface. So they're here and they're monitored and they are healthy. So the question comes up occasionally, what is not monitored in Windows Azure? So with the new Fabric Management Pack, which is just in preview, I just wanted to point out that we're not going to get performance information on our virtual machines yet. I'm not on the development team developing that management pack, so I can't really predict the future there. But no doubt some people are going to ask for that feature. And if I know anything from the MVP program, I know Microsoft listens very carefully to their customers. Case in point, I made some suggestions for one of the System Center integration packs for Orchestrator, and I found that a chapter I wrote in the Orchestrator book was actually laid to waste because they'd fixed everything I said could work a little better this way. So I was pleasantly surprised. So what I have for you on my screen here now is just the diagram view for that simple cloud service in Azure. I have a couple of virtual machines with the VM construct and the VHD beneath that's been discovered automatically. So I kept saying that everything is live data. I just want to point out that you can right-click any element within a diagram view, and I can launch alert views, performance views, etc. So if I've got that data out there. So before I forget, because if I forget, Matt is not going to let me forget it, I have a feeling.
I can kick you.
Yes, he can kick me. I've opened that door and I can't close it now. I'm going to show you some custom dashboard views. So we're just really beginning to see with the SQL Management Pack, with the Azure Management Pack, with the later releases of the Ops Operations Manager Management Pack, some of these dashboard packs that contain some views. So I work with customers monitoring all sorts of infrastructure. I've created some custom dashboards for Active Directory and Exchange I want to show you, just to give you an idea of what you can build in a few minutes' time. So with the dashboard views, this is we're going to look at these from the monitoring workspace. So I have here some Exchange dashboard views, and you'll notice by their names that I've carved up some of the elements of physical Exchange health and some of the elements of logical Exchange health. So I've got my server transport and database. I even have my high availability components out there. So if you have DAGs and HA configurations in Exchange, that management pack does a great job of monitoring them. I want you also to see here I have an Exchange service level objective dashboard. I'm just going to give you a look at that and tell you how easy it is to configure that sort of monitoring. So I'll pop through a couple of these dashboards, which you can build right here in a wizard, incidentally. If I right-click that folder and select New Dashboard View, I'm going to get a wizard that will take me through the process of building a dashboard with 1 to 9 screens. And I can pick different types of dashboards. So the grid layout is what I'm going to use to build a dashboard that you see in the background here that has multiple types of data, has multiple windows. The service level dashboard is going to limit me to just my service level objective type information, and I'm going to show you how you turn that feature on, so to speak, because it's really quite easy. And then my performance data, I can do in a grid layout. What I will say, just notes from the field, I like to put performance data in a dashboard in a grid view that has exactly one window, because the performance data gives me the performance data in a nice visual fashion. Then it gives me a lower pane, so to speak, where I can determine which performance data streams I want to show in the chart. And I found that with the performance data, when I get to this layout box, one cell is the right answer. But I just wanted to show you can pick 1 to 9 cells. And when you pick options in the 5 and 6 range there, you get some options for how you lay the dashboard out. And you can come back and update it later. The only limiting factor once you run this wizard is the number of cells you pick here, is the number of cells you have to work with. If I want to change that up, I've got to delete the dashboard and go back to scratch. Mm. But you see here I've got multiple layout options. I pick one of those, I drive that forward, and I pick the types of widgets I would like to put in there. So let's say I pick 5 of these. I now create what amounts to an empty dashboard, and I'm going to have linkable items that will allow me to plug the type of data in here I can see. So the widgets include state data, alert data, performance data. There is even an instance details view, so I can highlight an instance in one pane and see the details of the instance in another pane. Pretty interesting, one I had to play with a bit. And then you will see a special widget I want to just explain to you because it's the one I think that's maybe not obvious to everyone. So I've created my dashboard. You see I have the click to add widget option here. If you can't see it, here it is in Technicolor and high resolution, fully zoomed. Click to add widget. I'm going to get the dashboard layouts with my widgets that are available to me. So you'll see the SLA widget, which we're going to add to show our service level objectives. I wanted to point to this one right here, objects by performance. You might ask yourself, what in the heck is that? I like to call that the top N widget. So the objects by performance allows me to present the top or bottom X number of objects based on their performance counter. So it's going to, if you wanted to put the network interfaces with the highest utilization, I could show top 10, top 20, etc. So let's just take this a couple of steps in. And I would say, and you'll notice here it's asking me if I want to pick a group or an object, meaning I can pick a group of computers to filter this down. So I'm typically going to be working with groups in my case to make these very dynamic. So if I have, because Operations Manager, without getting too far down the monitoring rabbit hole, will allow me to create dynamically populated groups. The management packs that you install for Azure, for Exchange, for, you know, insert your, you know, cloud component here, dynamic groups are included out of the box. I can leverage those groups here to automatically populate.
So could you have a view that did the top utilizing virtual machine within a specific cloud scope, for instance, if your tenant admin of a particular cloud wanted that visibility across their cloud?
So if I wanted to have that visibility, I'd be creating some custom groups probably to get that down to just where I like it. And I will say that's the common theme. Go read one of the 175 blog posts in the world that explain how to create dynamic groups in Operations Manager, because to create my custom dashboards here for Exchange, for Active Directory, for Insert Component here, I find I'm creating a lot of custom groups, which keeps me in the UI, which means I don't have to be a rocket scientist to make this happen. Mm. But let's just look at a couple of these dashboard types. So I have, for example, here just a grid-based dashboard that has elements of physical and logical exchange health. So the organization, for example, the mounted database copies. These are just types of objects, classes of objects that are discovered in the Exchange Management Pack. I have the server role health. Now, one thing you're going to notice in all of my dashboards is a common thread. You notice how the unhealthy stuff floats to the top? Mm. I'm going to give you just one tip that's really, really important here. And I'm going to go click the option to configure this widget. There's a little gear with that widget. When I configure these widgets, there's one thing I always change from the default. I get down here to the display window. And I always make sure that I highlight health, and I move health from the left to the right. And you'll see that I order my sorting. You notice I can prioritize how these are sorted. I always put health in descending order, which always gives me the unhealthy stuff at the top, because this view may be showing you 150 virtual machines in Azure. I don't want to have to go scrolling to find what requires my attention, right? So that one little tip, health descending, is always going to ensure in any sort of health-based view that you get exactly the little nasties up at the top, so to speak. So switching gears here, let's look at a service level objective dashboard that gives me this nice gear or dial or dashboard appearance. So my exchange environment is super healthy. What did I do to enable this? Well, service level objectives is a tracking mechanism we turn on to with the service level tracking feature to tell operations manager to watch a particular application. We need to have a distributed application model or a service to do that, which are created for us automatically in many cases, as they are with, you know, the Exchange Management Pack and many of those tier one workloads, we'd call them. So at the end of the day, what we do have to do is turn on service level tracking. So service level tracking basically tells operations manager, I want you to track the availability or the performance of a particular element. And so I've configured for the services that are created by default, I have created some service level tracking in my console right here. So I'm in the authoring space. I'm under the management packs object node. It's mostly, this wizard's dead simple to run. It's mostly about knowing where you need to go to look for it. And you'll notice that I've set up service level tracking for a number of services. That's the key to making these service level dashboards. So while I'm opening that up, let's talk about what we can do with a service level dashboard in SharePoint, Matt.
So from a SharePoint, when you say SharePoint, not from a monitoring SharePoint, but from a presentation in SharePoint.
Exactly. How do we integrate this visual component into SharePoint for the not monitoring folks for our environment?
Yeah, correct. And we saw and talked about earlier when we were talking about chargeback, how I can render, and we also talked about it with distributed application rendering Visio in SharePoint. So this shouldn't be a bolt out of the blue in terms of a surprise. This can be rendered through SharePoint. So we can present these rich service level dashboards that have nice charts, simple to understand for our business decision makers, for our key application stakeholders. We can just see, simple to understand, my application's meeting a service level that we defined jointly. Mm-hmm. I want it to be 99.99999% or whatever, maybe slightly less in your environment, because it's maybe slightly more because it's so expensive. I would be expecting a 6.9s I'm going to ask for your cloud. But either way, we can ask and for that kind of level of availability and map that onto a service level dashboard that we then present through a SharePoint portal that could be weaved in with day-to-day SharePoint access for those types of users who are accessing their documents, their regular portals to access for their day-to-day work. So the nice thing is by that is that just that presentation layer. It doesn't have to be within Ops Manager. It could be through the web console. It could be through SharePoint.
Yeah. Well said. So let's have a look at just configuring the service level tracking here. So I've basically, for objects to track, I've browsed out to the distributed application model for Exchange. So there are many distributed app models included by default. You'll want to get comfortable with that concept. It's pretty well explained on TechNet, and a distributed app model is something we can build in our UI. So I'm going to look at what I added here earlier, and what I've basically done is targeted that Exchange distributed app model for an availability SLA of 99%. So I can get into performance SLAs, which means as long as in the performance category of health and operations manager, I'm yellow or green, I'm compliant. If I'm red, I'm not. And the same goes for availability and performance. Red is bad, green is good, and yellow is impacted but okay, but we're functional at that point. So it's
and you're going for 2 9s. Is that what you're going for?
So Matt, I am going to promise you 5 9s in the same week. So Monday through Friday, I guarantee you 5 9s.
Thank you.
In your availability numbers. And then we get that Exchange service level dashboard. So incidentally, with these dashboard views, I can add multiple distributed applications, multiple SLO tracking mechanisms. So if I wanted to be able to just browse through these all in the same dashboard.
So you'd have a dashboard with lots of cool charts, pie charts and stuff. And
well, so I can only see one at a time, but I could basically change this so I have Active Directory, Exchange, etc. So I can just click down these and the dial changes in the bottom. So it's possible to stack my dashboards here all in one. I tend not to because I'm building application-specific scenarios for different teams, but if you wanted to do something in SharePoint to show a lot of dashboards in
across the whole environment,
for instance.
Exactly. So it can be done.
Absolutely. So that's a proper first glance at your dashboards, the dashboard view that's new in 2012. We had a dashboard view in 2007 that was a completely different and much less exciting entity, frankly, than what we see here.
And the service level stuff was new as well. That wasn't built in the box in previous versions.
There was a solution accelerator in previous versions. Now it's native and more advanced than what we've had in years past, for sure, and much easier to configure. So really just a few minutes of our time. And those dashboards, I think I built that Exchange set and Active Directory set combined in about half a day. So just a lot of playing around and customizing until I was happy with what I saw.
Once you've built a couple, though, you can spin up these dashboards incredibly quickly. So
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So hopefully you have a better idea now for how we configure our app controller UI to interface with the private and public components. So again, leveraging our investments in role-based security and VMM from the building of our fabric and our service offerings. And then on the Azure side, plugging our Active Directory groups in and giving them access to the subscriptions. So we've seen a bit of deployment. We'll cover off that move operation, migrating from VMM up to Azure when we come back from the meal break. You've got a first look at the new Azure Fabric Monitoring, which is Microsoft's first version of that pack that takes us from platform as a service into the infrastructure side of the house. And we'll look forward to future versions that expand out into more granular performance monitoring capabilities. So where does that leave us, Mr. McSpirit?
So that leaves us at the point where we're going to take a meal break, whether that's breakfast, whether that's lunch, whether that's dinner, or just a snack, whatever your preference is. But you've got 45 minutes to take that, and we will be back. I'm going to go through Module 3, which will look at some more cool stuff around the hybrid cloud and help you understand just how we start to automate, how we start to build a little bit more capability into the solution whilst using these technologies that we've started to learn about this morning and in the previous session. So we shall see you after the break. We'll start with a couple of questions as well at the start of the session that we haven't quite had time to cover in this session, but we shall see you in 45 minutes. So join us then.